Good afternoon, Eastern Washington, Western Montana, Northern Idaho, and Northeast Oregon. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live, brought to you once again by On Fire Ministries and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action. About the gospel of the kingdom, Isaiah 61, 1 through 4. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord anointed me to bring good news to the humble. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim release to captives or to mask wearers, and freedom to prisoners or people who are living in the prison of fear, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant those who mourn in Zion, giving them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the cloak of praise instead of a disheartened spirit. So they will be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Then they will rebuild the ancient ruins, they will raise up the former devastations, and they will repair the ruined cities, the desolations of many generations. Today in America and across the world right now, all eyes are watching and waiting to see if freedom-loving people are actually going to stand and defend liberty once again. Coming up on October 15th, 5 o'clock, downtown Spokane again, another rally where we are going to be supporting those whose jobs are coming up on the line here on the 18th of October. We are putting things in place as well here at On Fire Ministries. We are going to be launching a class from an expert in entrepreneurship here locally to help people start their own business that are going to be facing the firing squad of their company. For those that are losing jobs out there, I want you to hear this message. This is actually a tremendous opportunity. A tremendous opportunity where these large corporations are going to be firing mass swaths of people, started today actually with Kaiser Permanente. Firing mass swaths of people for having the moral courage to say, no, we are not going to go along with something akin to what happened in Germany in the 1930s and 40s. Akin to what happened in the 1950s and 60s. In China. But a lot of people are looking at this as a negative thing. It is not. This is a tremendous opportunity to actually start your own business. Take over the market that these people have so irresponsibly represented. And again, this is a free market, is it not? So they should love competition. So if you are facing this prospect, I want you to change your mindset to a kingdom mindset. The idea that right now there is so much opportunity, so much influence up for grabs because these companies are firing vast swaths of the most productive, smartest, wisest, reliable workers, those people. All of you listening that this resonates with should start your own business. Come together. Start your own medical clinics. Come together and start your own shoe store. Come together. Start your own health care insurance. Start your own law firm. Start your own, and I meant to say health care clinic. Start your own. Don't rely on anybody else. Start your own business. Well, how am I going to learn how to do that? Well, that's exactly why I'm telling you right now that On Fire Ministries is going to be launching a comprehensive but still simple class on how to start your own business and turn this opportunity into one where Christians and patriots begin to flourish in the free market. We have some pretty wicked stuff going on out there, and as the the Marxists continue to assail the police force like they try to do during every Marxist revolution, there is going to be a need for private security companies. So if there is any police officers out there that are facing their job being terminated, why not start a private security company? Why not start a private first responder service? There are so many opportunities, and I hope this is resonating and people are starting to change their mindset. Whatever Nike, Amazon, Boeing, whatever these large corporations have done, we can do better. And that is the American spirit. Let's grasp this as an opportunity so that we actually can give a garland instead of ashes. In other words, the victory crown instead of the ashes that these communists in this country want to leave in their wake. That is the difference of the gospel of the kingdom. Looking at these things, not as, oh, woe's me, this is persecution. Yeah, it's persecution, no question about it. But what are we going to do about it? We're going to be Americans. We're going to step up and we're going to do it better than they did. We're going to take over that industry. We're going to shove out the Amazons. We're going to shove out the Boeings. We're going to shove out the Kaiser Permanentes and replace them with our own healthcare clinics, replace them with our own health insurance, our own auto insurance, whatever it is. What an opportunity. And it starts right here in Spokane, Washington, the great crystal city. And that brings me now to your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Folks, I got to tell you something, and I want everybody that is watching Patriot Radio today, I want you to share this with your relatives, your friends, and your family. Right now, I've been receiving multiple reports from people I very much trust. Very reliable sources at very high levels that the Chinese aggression that is happening right now may culminate in China doing something in the very near future. I watched a video with the Taiwanese foreign minister, and his voice was breaking as he was talking about the Chinese threat right now. And I want to stop and I want to give a little bit of education and history on geopolitics. I want to talk about the geo part of it, specifically geography. There's a book by Tim Marshall called Prisoners of Geography. Fantastic foundational read for anybody that is studying in international relations, wants to understand world history. Tim Marshall, Prisoners of Geography. Essentially, his premise is that geography helps to make nations great or helps to make nations vulnerable. For example, the United States is great because we have mountain ranges on both coastlines and a navigable river system, the Mississippi and the Missouri, right down the center of the country. Okay. In addition to that, he makes the case that China has certain inevitable political moves it has to make in order to survive because of its geography. So let me give you an example of what that means. So China is hemmed in on its southern border by the Himalayan Mountains. In the sea, you have South Korea, Japan, and Taiwan right off its coast, which hem it in on its coastline. And most of its oil comes through what's called the Straits of Malacca, which is a very narrow passage between the Asian continent and the islands. What that means is that that can be shut off at any time very quickly. So the Chinese are very cognizant that geographically they're vulnerable. This is why they are seeking a road and rail network over the Himalayan mountains through the Kashmir province. This is why there's been this provocation and contention with India recently, and we've been talking about actually the last 2 years, because they want to build this over the Himalayan mountains and then through down through Pakistan to Lahore, Pakistan, to a port there. So they bypass the Straits of Malacca. This is also why they want to do the Silk Road, the new Silk Road, or the Belt and Road Initiative, which will go through, wait for it, the Uyghur province, which is why they're pacifying and exterminating in what is arguably genocide, the Uyghur population in Western China, through Afghanistan, which the pretender just gave to them, and then all the way through to Turkey, which the Chinese have made a massive and significant foreign investment in to essentially buy the silence of these Turkic-speaking peoples in the stands. So all of the countries that have Stan at the end of them, these were Turkic-speaking peoples when the Ottoman Empire was huge. So Tajikistan, which is now, by the way, having an issue because the Taliban is helping arm militants in that country. You have Turkmenistan, Kyrgyzstan, all of the, and then obviously Uzbekistan and Afghanistan, all of these stands, the Chinese have essentially bought the silence of Turkey by investing a massive amount of money in them, and also by the fact that the terminal point of the Belt and Road Initiative is going to be in that vicinity. Nobody knows exactly, but in that vicinity. So the history of China and the geography of China determines that it will have to invade Taiwan and Japan and probably South Korea in order to secure its sea lanes there to expand power out from there. Most notably to some place like, oh, I don't know, Alaska. So let me paint a scenario for you. What if in the next 30 to 60 to 90 days, the Chinese did in fact invade Taiwan? Would Joe Biden, who Trevor Loudon was talking about, was elected by the Citizens for a Livable World, a communist front organization, to degrade the United States military, would Joe Biden actually do something to the communists who actually backed his initial foray into politics and continue to back him to this day? And the answer is very likely no. So then what happens? The Chinese can then project power out from there. And at the same time that that happens, potentially, could there be a massive worldwide cyber attack that takes down critical infrastructure inside the United States, including U.S. ports, for example, the Port of Tacoma, depending on who you talk to, 70 to 75% of the supplies go to Alaska through that port. And what would Alaska be? Another jumping off point potentially for China, weakened by its lack of supplies. Do you see how this can all cascade into something very dramatic? And the Chinese also are facing right now the potential default of Evergrande, a large property holding company. Now there has been one that was solvent, Fantasia, the holding company there that defaulted on $206 million maturation of bonds on Monday. Another mid-sized Chinese property holding company looks like it may default this next week around the 15th of October, which is an interesting date because that's the date that has been given by Antifa for a general strike across the United States, which would include, guess what, ports. So could you imagine all of this perfect storm coming together at once? Well, it looks like the enemy's plan may be exactly that. Which brings us to And Magazine. And the great Sam Faddis, today's fiction may be tomorrow's fact, Taiwan is on the brink. Yesterday evening, in excess of 50 Chinese aircraft penetrated the air defense zone surrounding Taiwan. I want to add a comment on that. There was one Taiwanese general that said in 40 years they have never seen anything like that. So clearly this is a probing operation. This is exactly how Asian communist armies function. But listen to this. I don't know if you heard this in the mainstream media, but this was published on the 6th of October, so we're talking yesterday. So this is two days ago Sam Faddis is referring to. Listen to this. Some of these aircraft, according to Taiwanese authorities, then intruded into the legally recognized airspace over Taiwan. It would be like having Chinese aircraft flying over Washington state. In response, Taiwanese anti-aircraft missile batteries engaged the incoming aircraft. Several Chinese aircraft were struck and shot down. The exact number is as yet unknown. The number of Chinese pilots who were killed is also unknown. Following the incident, Chinese aircraft began a massive series of airstrikes on Taiwan. Now, this is, I want to be really clear right now, okay? This is a fictional scenario, but many of you all of a sudden like, whoa, wait, is this real? The penetration of the Taiwanese defense zone, that has happened. And it is, my commentary is correct, the first time in 40 years that they've seen anything like this. But could you imagine if they then penetrated the actual airspace of Taiwan and had planes shut down, there would be a war almost immediately. And this is Sam Faddis's point, that this fictional scenario could actually become fact. And again, I'm hearing from many sources right now that Taiwan, in fact, is on the brink. Here is one of the other things, too, geostrategically. Taiwan, talking about its vulnerability, could not long survive a blockade because Taiwan lives entirely on imported energy. It imports 1 million barrels of oil a day and 2 billion cubic meters of gas a month. And it all has to arrive on the island by ship. If the Chinese impose a blockade, lights out, businesses shut down. Taiwan also can't feed itself. High population density produces roughly a third of what its population eats. So Taiwan, both from an energy perspective and a food perspective, is vulnerable. And I think, again, the Chinese understand this. They know it. They see the United States right now as weak. And they could, in fact, do something here very, very shortly. What does that mean for you and me? That means that there is a potential for increased and dramatic supply chain disruptions. And as I talked about on Tuesday, there was this joint open letter from the International Chamber of Shipping, representing about 80% of that industry, saying essentially this, quote, "The impact of nearly 2 years worth of strain placed upon maritime and road transportation workers, but also impacting air crews, is now being seen. Their continued mistreatment is adding pressure on an already crumbling global supply chain. We are witnessing unprecedented disruptions and global delays and shortages on essential goods, including electronics, food, fuel, and medical supplies. Consumer demand is rising, and the delays look set to worsen ahead of Christmas and into 2022. So things are verifying this. Now, coming back to the international front, as far as Taiwan and China are concerned, the Epic Times has a great article. Lawmakers urge Biden to stand up for Taiwan amid rising Chinese aggression. So they're understanding that they're escalating Chinese military provocations. But the problem is these people are not doing anything because, listen to my voice very clearly, the Democrat Socialists, okay, so this is a Marxist front organization, a communist front organization, are essentially in control of the Democrat Party right now. And more importantly, in control of certain committees in Congress. So do you think they're going to stand up to China? Again, very, very unlikely. So if you are listening to this show today, you've heard me say many times in the past, be prepared. Be prepared. I'm talking 1 to 2 years supply of food, seeds, etc. Just be prepared. It takes the fear out of everything so you can help your neighbors and the rest of your family. It really looks like in most any event, there are going to be some supply chain disruptions. The question is going to be how bad. And if China is already having an economic downturn with some of these defaults that are going on right now, they may be forced to go to war. That may be the only option left for the Communist Party in China to survive. Where would they attack out to? Again, it looks very clearly like Taiwan is their first target. Japan may be right after that. And obviously, at the same time, very likely there would be a massive worldwide cyber attack, but specifically targeting the United States. And it seems very clear in recent times there's been probing of very critical sectors inside the United States. We're going to talk about that right now, that cyber portion coming to us from Technocracy News. Cyber Polygon is a project of the World Economic Forum and has been likened to Event 201. It seemingly scripted the COVID-19 pandemic. Cyber Polygon focuses on the response to a global cyber event where major portions of the internet, but not the whole internet, are shut down by hackers. And understand something, the sophisticated equipment that's needed for hackers is state-sponsored, okay? The question is, which state? So this is a fascinating article, and I'm going to post this up on social media, how it makes a connection between Facebook's global outage and a potential Pearl Harbor-like attack leveled at big tech. Very real stuff, folks, and we need to be ready for this. We're Americans, we will persevere. But we have to be prepared for this. Spiritually, we have to be prepared mentally, we have to be prepared physically. Which brings us now to the national front. I'm going to talk about vaccines. Coming to us from Project Veritas. Pfizer leaks. Whistleblower goes on record, reveals internal emails from chief scientific officer and senior director of worldwide research discussing the COVID vaccine. Quote, we want to avoid having the information on the fetal cells floating out there. End quote. Quote, we have been trying as much as possible to not mention the fetal cell lines. One or more line, more cell lines with an origin that can be traced back to human fetal tissue has been used in laboratory tests associated with the vaccine program, end quote. I remember when it was said, why do Christians have a problem with the vaccine? And I very clearly said, because they have been tested on aborted fetal tissue lines. And now it's being exposed that that's exactly true. And moreover, they were trying to specifically cover that up. Why would they want to cover that up? Because they don't want Christians knowing about this, because who wants to be a party to the wholesale slaughter of innocent human beings and children? The National Pulse also has an article on the same thing. And the point is this. This wasn't some low underling. Pfizer's chief scientific officer, Philip Dormitzer, admits aborted fetuses or aborted fetus tissue is used in the company's vaccine program, but the employees should just stick with Pfizer's public narrative. One more reason not to take the vaccine. In addition to that, Fauci, it's coming to us from Populist Press, ignores natural immunity because it foils his mass vaccination plan. Senator Rand Paul charged Director Fauci is purposefully acting ignorant on the benefits of natural immunity to COVID because it would foil his mass vaccination plan. Indeed. Meanwhile, from the national file, Sweden and Denmark banned the use of the Moderna spike vaccine, young people citing myocarditis. So if you don't know what that is, it's swelling around the heart. We actually saw this happen with anthrax vaccines in the military. 19-year-old kids all of a sudden have myocarditis, and they're taken out for weeks to recover. So Sweden and Denmark are now banning the use of Moderna's spike vaccine in young people. Okay. Why is this important? Because more and more evidence is coming out that there might this might have been, especially the response to COVID-19, might have been planned intentionally. Gateway Pundit emerges a video, I love this, of Fauci and HHS officials plotting for a new avian flu virus to enforce universal flu vaccination. Wow. Listen to this thing. In order to make the transition from getting out of the tried and true egg growing, which we know gives us results that can be beneficial, this is Fauci talking. I mean, we've done well with that. There must be something that has to be much better. You have to prove that this works, and you've got to go through all the clinical trials, et cetera, et cetera. Then he says this. So we really do have a problem of how the world perceives influenza, and it's going to be very difficult to change that unless you do it from within and say, I don't care what your perception is. We're going to address the problem in a disruptive and in an iterative way. Wow. So in other words, they want to make sure that this happens. I want to quote one more quote out of this. In short, this panel discussion focused on why or what they perceived as a need for the universal flu vaccine, but they admitted that the old way of producing vaccines was not sufficient for their purposes and that they needed some kind of global event where many people were dying in order to be able to roll out a new mRNA vaccine to be tested, listen to this, tested on the public, end quote. Once again, if you don't understand what's happening with this, go read it for yourself. Listen to their words from their mouth. Come to your conclusion. But very clearly, they have been using this to their advantage. And people, friends, family that have fallen victim to their propaganda are being used as guinea pigs. On a good note, actually two good notes, and I love this too. Planned Parenthood denied from continuing abortion law challenge by Texas Supreme Court. So the Texas Supreme Court denied their request to resume legal challenges to Texas's new abortion law. Thank you, Jesus. So that is some good news. Also some good news. First arrest was made in Arizona for voter fraud after the audit. The Arizona Attorney General's office announced on October 5th that Guillermina Fuentes was indicted for voting another person's early ballot in the August 2020 primary election. She was charged with conspiracy, forgery, and a ballot abuse count. So that's a good move forward. That coming to us from Populist Press. And this is just showing that accountability needs to work and it needs to happen. Lastly, WorldNet Daily, Facebook whistleblower, worked for unit that centered Hunter Biden laptop story, sought employment with social media giant to combat misinformation. So it looks like this whistleblower, Frances Haugen, may not be who she really claims to be or makes herself out to be. And that is the briefing. Remember, October 15th, downtown Spokane. Once again, we're going to be standing with all these people that are facing termination here on October 18th. We're going to be standing with them. And also holding leaders accountable who are betraying the people. Listen, love brings freedom. Evil brings control. Love brings liberty. And real leaders who love people will fight for liberty. It is the job of elected officials to protect the God-given unalienable rights of life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. And in the Washington State Constitution, Article 26, and you can go read this for yourself, it says there shall be perfect toleration of religious sentiment and that nobody should be molested in their person or property on account of their mode of worship. Well, one of our modes of worship is what we put in our body. and that we keep the temple of the Holy Spirit, the body of the believer, clean. And so the fact that they are now admitting publicly that these vaccination lines, some of them anyway, for sure have been tested on aborted fetal tissue. Who wants to have that anywhere near us? Who wants to be a part of that? There are other vaccines in this, in the regular system, just normal vaccines in regards to like MMR that actually were grown from aborted fetal tissue lines. So we, as Christians, have a very clear protection in the Washington State Constitution in Article 26. And by the way, that's the only clause in there that's irrevocable. It's the first words of it. So very clearly, the governor's stance is unconstitutional. And anybody else that's going along with what the governor's saying is also acting unconstitutionally and intentionally throwing a lot of people under the bus here and throwing the Constitution out the door. We need to reclaim that, and it's we the people that are the government. We need to stand up for that, and that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us, and make sure you go to Gab, MeWe, Getter, and all the other ones. Look at and look for at Matt Shea. Follow me there. Share it with your friends and family. And if you absolutely have to, go to Patriot Radio US on Facebook. Patriot Radio is also on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, and Amazon. And we are replayed across the entire ACN network every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 p.m. as well. Well, it's my honor to once again introduce Glenn Morgan of We the Governed. Coming back on the show, we're going to be talking about election integrity, among some other things. I want to educate some folks on some of the things happening in Washington. Glenn, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
Matt, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on the air. It's always it's an honor to be here, and always enjoy being on the show.
Well, we have some voter fraud that's been exposed now for sure in Arizona. I'm hearing some very clear things that'll be coming out here, it sounds like, in the next 60 days. In addition to that, now that the subpoenas not only have been issued, but they've said that they're going to agree to abide by those subpoenas. If that's the case, where do you think this goes in Arizona? And then what does that mean for Washington State? And what should we be looking for here now that they've made one of their first arrests down in Arizona after the audit for voter fraud?
Well, I mean, I think what you see in Arizona is that one of the biggest things that they have been focused on there is this massive volume of what appear to be non-legal voting, right? So it could be phantom voters, could be just fake voter registrations. It just could be whatever, you know, there's going to be a number of different categories that might fall in, but essentially non-valid votes that were taken and counted. We don't even know for sure that there were people attached to those, but somebody voted those ballots and they got counted in the election. And that is really kind of the oldest way of committing vote fraud that exists. I mean, it's been that way for decades. And if you can build up these fake IDs, right? This is what they had uncovered in Northern Ireland years ago when they had to clean up their voter rolls. And I think it's the same thing that is going on in Washington. And we know this right now because Skagit County is the first county in our teams that are doorbelling and actively canvassing based on the list that we've been putting together. And they've already uncovered, hundreds and hundreds of clearly fake or fraudulent votes that were not legitimate, that were cast, that exceed the balance or that exceed the margin of victory in two legislative races and a judge race there. And I think that what's happening in Arizona, but I mean, independent of Arizona, just what we're finding in Washington, justifies the concerns that we have over that element of our election integrity process alone. And that is looking at just even cleaning up the voter rolls and how many and who's actually getting these ballots and voting them. We don't know actually who's getting them, but we do know that ballots are being voted and there's not a legitimate person behind that ballot.
Well, I find it interesting that especially surrounding this election issue, it is going to the heart or the core of America. A recent poll from the University of Virginia showed a significant percentage of Democrats and Republicans have a negative view of democracy. And in other words, they're very concerned about the direction of the country. And I think a large portion of this is very clearly election integrity. And this group that was polled said that they're actually for secession now, if it's going to continue down the same road. And I think that, you know, this is one of the core issues that we're facing today. How do we restore integrity in the election system? And so before we go down the road too far, if you could give the listeners a little bit of a primer on what you personally have uncovered here in Washington State in regards to election integrity, and then let's go into where this is headed.
Sure. Well, I think I'll break in just a quick three things. I mean, number one, we've already talked about the Department of Licensing willfully and as policy against both federal and state law, aggressively registering non-U.S. citizens to vote. Even when those people are here in green cards or H-1B visa holders and they know that they aren't supposed to be registered to vote, they're doing it anyway. And what we don't know is how many of them vote, but we do know that they're just doing that as policy. And they've been doing it for years. And that opens up a huge door to potential fraud. Then you've got the examples that I used here a few weeks ago, even just out of San Juan County, as an example of real slipshod, sloppy sort of recount processes where they can't find all the ballots, but they call it close enough for government work and just call it good. You know, when they did, even just doing precinct recounts, I mean, basic stuff that there's a lot of problems on. And most recently, and we're planning to show the video of this at the voter integrity event in Post Falls, Idaho, coming up on Saturday, is an interview I've done with a gal that was not a conservative, somebody who clearly was out registering homeless people for years to vote, working in camps. She was homeless herself, and finding out that after she'd registered them to vote, that it appears that their ballots weren't coming to them and instead were being voted by somebody else, according to her testimony. And we think that we even know some of the people who were involved in it, employees of the city of Olympia and some people that are tied into kind of a left-leaning, you know, group there. And they may have access to hundreds of votes that and somebody's voting them. And apparently, according to their testimony, it's not the people who got registered to vote. And the funny thing is, in this interview, this homeless advocate who's worked out there for a long time, you know, trying to work with them, she said that the only solution is to do in-person voting.
Which, when I was in the legislature, for the record, everybody listening, I actually introduced that quite frequently with several of my colleagues. Anyway, I want to go to the next step with this. The voter rolls particularly, it should be really easy. You just go to the change of address database that the U.S. Postal Service keeps, compare that with the voter rolls. And you would think it would be really kind of an easy thing to do, but apparently that might be a little bit controversial as well. If you could go into that a little bit more detail.
Yeah, there's several different ways of going in and doing this. I mean, one is the, as you mentioned, the National Change of Address Update system that the post office uses. That's a good place to start. And there are, you know, every year there's going to be hundreds, thousands of people that'll be well over 100,000 usually in a given year. They're going to say, hey, I'm moving. You know, it's usually about 1% of the population a month. So there's quite a few people that do that. And that should automatically be part of the process to update your voter roll system. Now, it's not perfect. The post office is a government agency, just like anybody else, so they're just as incompetent. But nevertheless, it gives you a place to start. And using those lists, and who voted that were on that list, that's how we've been able to uncover a lot of the problems that we found in Skagit County and elsewhere. But it also is about going back and auditing your voting rolls and staying on top of it. Before we had mail-in voting, it used to be very common for local precinct officers to doorbell and just walk around their precinct, both Democrats and Republicans oftentimes, just making sure that their voter rolls were accurate as they would come closer to the election time. And we've gone away from that, of course, with mail-in voting. And now there's not even an effort to do any kind of door-to-door cleanup on voter rolls. And because of that now, there's a lot of crufty, bad addresses on the voter rolls. And mail-in voting allows you to have keep them on the list for a long, long time, and it causes a lot of problems.
Well, right now here in Washington State, if you were going to say there are three things that we need to do to clean things up here in Washington State, restore election integrity, what would they be? And also, if you could let the listeners know a little bit about some of the efforts that are going on to help do that.
Sure. Number one, I would make it so that every couple years at a minimum, you have to go back in, show your ID, verify that you are who you say you are, and re-register to vote. Just do it every 2 years, at 4 years at a minimum. But, I mean, at least do that often enough you can verify that it's a real person at the end of that ballot. And if they don't do that, then you put them into an inactive status. And I think that that would be number one. That's one step. Two, I think that you allow counties to have the ability to do in-person voting. And make that's your first step towards perhaps going back to that entirely. But try it out, and the ability to have that as an option for people, I think, would be superior to what we have now. And then finally, institute some kind of enforcement mechanism, because right now they aren't enforcing any of the situations where we do catch people committing fraud. Nobody's being prosecuted, and they have to restore some level of punishment for people who actually do commit fraud and they're caught committing fraud. I think that would really reduce the problem there. All of those things are being proposed as potential solutions as we work towards this process. But in the meantime, we don't want the perfect to be the enemy of good enough. And we, you know, as we start to work towards things, we're trying to clean up these roles as they exist now. And we've got 20 counties in the state that are actively doorbelling teams of them right now and finding these problems, submitting them in, trying to get them cleaned off the rolls, and identifying other ways that we think bad behavior is going on. Inevitably, as we do this, we're having whistleblowers come forward, and just like some of the ones I've already mentioned, and there are more that will come forward. And as we expose more and more of this, I think that that's what's making the left very nervous right now, is that some of these, you know, some of this mischief and dishonesty and corruption gets exposed. That's when you see them panic the most. But there are, you know, there's a number of good legislators who are willing to make these proposals. As you know, sometimes the first couple times you make proposals, it doesn't get implemented. But it does start to motivate people, and eventually that becomes the foundation for making the reforms that we desperately need.
So let's talk a little bit about court cases going forward. You know, we see what's happening in Arizona. I just don't see elections being overturned, as it were. I don't know how people think that would possibly happen, but certainly there are some checks that can be put into place for our elections going forward, so people can have restored confidence in our election system. And you mentioned one of them, and that is in-person voting.
Right.
How likely would that happen in Washington State? And, you know, what should people expect? Okay, let's say we prove fraud in an election. Is somebody really going to be thrown out of office? Because I think there's a lot of misinformation out there that some of that's even a possibility.
Yeah, I don't see that as being a realistic possibility in Washington State. I don't see the likelihood of you overturning an election or changing it right now, the way things exist now. However, what's happened, and I think, you know, if you were to ask me that question, Matt, a year ago or a year and a half ago, I would have said no chance at all. You'd never change things. But the surveys, I think, that are going on now, as more people are seeing what's happening, I think that there's going to be a greater trend towards moving towards a more validated election process, even if it's just a hybrid system where you have the option to vote in person. I think people will be shocked at how many people are going to take advantage of that rather than entrust their ballot to whoever when they try to mail it or send it in remotely. So I think that's actually a more likely scenario now than it ever was in the past. I'm not sure that the courts are the path to salvation when it comes to these problems right now. There's a great need for us to really wake up and realize that we've outsourced our responsibility as citizens to bureaucrats just because there's a law in the books that says that they can do it. It doesn't mean that they actually are doing the job that we paid them to do or hired them to do. And I think that that makes us angry, of course. Most people are going to be angry about that. I am. But that doesn't mean you sit back and just sit on your hands and throw up your, you know, you've got to get involved and engaged. And we're doing the hard work right now. Hundreds of people, literally as we speak right now, I would say in about 15 minutes, they're starting to hit doors in many of these counties around the state. And they are uncovering and doing the hard work that you need in order to document and prove the fixes and the changes that we have to have. And my hat's off to Skagit County for being the first county to really make the biggest advancement in this effort. But they've kind of led the way. And now many other counties, of course, are following their lead. And, you know, we're finding a lot of interesting problems, you know, terrifying problems when you really think about it, but stuff that can be fixed. And I think that it's important not to surrender and give up, throw your hands up in the air and say, well, I'm going to run away and, you know, and just let this go to heck. You know, we don't have to do that. We can stop and engage right now and make the impact and the change that we need it to be. And I think the other side's terrified of that. I mean, I think that the left or the establishment might be a better way to term it. They're terrified of anybody actually peeling back the curtain and seeing what's going on behind the scenes. And that's what we end up having to do.
We always have to fight in the courts if we can, right? But I really appreciate what you're saying. You know, okay, you're fighting in the courts, but what is our duty as citizens? How are we going to stand up? How are we going to try to stop this? And one of the ways is actually going out there voting, being an informed voter. Another way is actually being a part of the process, being an election observer, getting involved, changing things at the local level. Those are all great solutions. And I think I want to highlight one of the things that we need to do, and I'm going to shift gears a little bit, is Glenn Morgan, I think we need to know who are the organizations behind some of these candidates that we're actually voting for, because some of them have actually done very clear attempts to undermine actually election integrity or undermine what I would consider core rights like property rights or like the idea of even lower taxes. They've actually gone against these types of things. Could you very quickly just talk about just that general idea of organizations behind candidates? And then also let's talk about a couple of those organizations that come to my mind right now, like FutureWise and Fuse.
Sure. And I'm glad you brought those up as examples. I mean, they're certainly not alone. There's other groups out there as well. The reconstituted ACORN, you know, when they got dissolved back in 2010, after James O'Keefe did his expose, you know, ACORN may have disappeared, but all they did is they sent their people and their organizers into new organizations. And ACORN was really well known in Washington State for committing vote fraud, for example. And I think it's important to look at these other groups because people obsess about the parties, and that's what they tend to focus on as a political party, like the Democrat Party or something. But those are not the groups that actually have a lot of power. What really has the power are these other groups like Fuse that are funded by billionaires, you know, Nick Hanauer and others, that go and put large sums of money into these groups, and they get out there and they do the organizing. They do the quote-unquote voter registration, whatever that really ends up meaning. You know, they're the ones that go out and do canvassing and harvesting of ballots, which in our state's not illegal. And they do a lot of the real heavy lifting work. It's not the parties that are trying to do that. It's these lefty groups. And FutureWise, you brought up as a good example, because our current public lands commissioner, of course, is the previous executive director of FutureWise. And as it turns out, we're going to be doing a story about a city council person down in Prosser, of all places, who's also tied into FutureWise very heavily. And this is an extremist group that's filed thousands of lawsuits against and certainly threatened litigation against almost every jurisdiction in Washington state, organized around the idea of destroying property rights, destroying suburban communities, destroying the ability to farm and live rurally, and aggressively pushing government control over all aspects of property rights. That's all they've done. It's just been a litigation factory on that front. And their threats of litigation have frequently cowed communities into passing planning, zoning rules that nobody in the community really wanted. They just did it out of threat of litigation. And that's all this group has done. And to have members of this organization that has such a bad history of destroying rural communities in Washington state, and to see them, their members, you know, leadership, senior leadership now stepping and trying to run for political office, there's nothing good that'll come about getting them in office. And Hillary Franz, our public lands commissioner, is a good example of somebody who prefers to just let the forest burn rather than, you know, do reasonable management policies to keep it from burning or, you know, or to even live in the forest where you're actually managing the timber in an efficient and renewable way. Instead, she prefers just to make it impossible to clean up the woods so that all they're going to do is just burn up, you know, every couple of years when we have a burn season. And these are the kind of people that we do not want in public office. And I think it's important to expose them. And their affiliation with these really extremist groups helps us understand where a lot of these people are coming from. There's no way they'd let you be executive director of FutureWise if you didn't buy into the agenda and be willing to push it on other people in the community.
Yeah, and I want to talk quickly about the FutureWise thing, because they believe in something called regionalism, which is essentially shoving everybody into cities and eliminating the middle class. And I found it interesting that if you look at just a quick history of FutureWise, you can find that they went against property tax reform. In other words, something that would have lowered everybody's property taxes. They went against every real common sense type of reform that most Americans, regardless of political party, said, yeah, that just makes sense. We should allow people to use their property and not be punished for just being merely property owners. And yet FutureWise has been really at the center of what I believe is a Marxist agenda coming from the Communist Manifesto, Chapter 2, saying that there should be an abolition of private property rights. It really seemed to be working along that line of effort. And many people here in Washington don't even know who they are, and yet they seem to be really involved in a lot of elections at the local level where these property rights issues are decided.
They are, and they're heavily engaged. I don't think people realize how much they're engaged in, like, the planning department and influencing any kind of changes in zoning or land use policies. And you're wondering how, well, you know, why did our community suddenly get this a really extremist land use policy or really restrictive rules where you're jumping through incredible hoops to do all kinds of ridiculous things. And it's organizations like FutureWise, and mainly FutureWise has been the primary one behind it. But they're basically implementing, forcing these local communities to take up these programs of threat of litigation or ideological intimidation or whatever it is. And that's the damage that comes from having these really well-funded, billionaire-funded organizations running around out here pushing these agendas. And people need to be more aware of it. And especially FutureWise, one that has threatened almost every community in Eastern Washington. I'm not actually aware of anybody that they haven't at least threatened to sue, and they've usually litigated against a good percentage of them. And so I know they're one of the most common issues, you know, groups that we see out there on the environmental movement. I always call, you know, they call themselves the green movement. I always call them gangrene. And, you know, they're gangrene in the government staffing section. And that's what we see, and that's what we have to push back on, because they hate property rights. They hate individual homes. They don't like the fact that people drive cars. They want to do whatever they can to end our ability to be independent and to live rurally, or even to just function without strong government, you know, subsidy or support of, you know, mass transit, all kinds of things. But they believe in bigger tax, higher taxes, of course, for their friends in the bureaucracy and the grants that they all apply for as well. So there's quite a bit of that that's going on.
So what's been interesting to me over the last, month and a half, you know, we had a rally here in Spokane, over 5,000 people in downtown Spokane, which followed on the heels of another rally of 3,000 people. People are beginning to wake up, and I've been very encouraged that a lot of younger people have been waking up. What would be your message to them today about getting involved in these types of issues? Because a lot of them have really kind of fallen for the line that socialism might be a good thing.
Well, I agree with you on the encouragement about some of these rallies. I was just speaking at a rally in Olympia. They had 4,000 there on Sunday. And same issue in opposition to the mandates of Inslee. And you're right, there's a lot more younger people getting involved right now, because some of them, I think, are starting to wake up to the fact their future now is at stake. You know, they are recognizing that the policies and decisions made by the current governing class is going to actually have a direct impact on their ability to raise a family, have a home, have a career, or just even have a future. And what I say that they really, most people that, especially if you're just starting out, nobody is an island themselves. You have to work with other people. Try to find teams of like-minded people in your community who you can start working with and strategizing with. It takes a very small team of people to make a very big impact. And if you're willing to work with others, find like-minded people, come up with causes things you want to focus on, whether that's changing your school board out, whether that's going against restrictive land use policies, reducing the size of taxes, whatever it is, you can find a lot of common ground, and that's how you get together and work together. It's kind of a, you know, it sounds elementary, but you start somewhere, and, you know, you can't assume that somebody else is going to do it for you. You have to step up and start to do it for yourself, and the more people that you can get together and work with on these projects or these teams, the more likely it is to be successful. And the other side's terrified of this. Exposing the truth, local organizations, people getting organized like that, that really does scare them, because a lot of them have a lot to hide, and they're not used to having any kind of opposition to their programs and their policies.
All right. If you could, as we wrap the show up here in the next couple of minutes, tell the listeners a little bit about Vote Watch Northwest.
Well, Vote Watch Northwest is based out of Spokane. It's one of the groups that we've been working with. I'm with the Voter Research Project. We also had started that early this year. And largely what we're trying to do is canvass the voting rolls, help clean them up, help identify other issues that we need to fix and address in the voting process, whether that be better transparency, more auditability, the ability to even do forensic audits, whatever that is. And that's a local group that's more focused on the Spokane area. And, you know, we're all on this together. We're not trying to build empires here. We're just trying to have groups that are organized locally so they can focus on the challenges in their community.
Awesome. Glenn Morgan, We the Governed, thank you so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today, and keep up the fight. I really appreciate all of the truth coming out from We the Governed and everything that you're doing. We really appreciate your efforts. I know you don't hear that enough, and I look forward to this article about what's going to be happening down there in Prosser, Washington.
Well, you bet, Matt. Thank you so much for having me on the air, and just encourage everybody to go to my YouTube channel as well, as long as I still have it, at We the Governed.
All right, sounds good. Blessings to you. All right, Glenn Morgan, We the Governed. Also, you can check out Vote Watch Northwest. There is going to be that event here this Saturday. I know some people in North Idaho are going to be at a different event that's going on, but Vote Watch Northwest, check it out. And I'm going to pull this up, put it up on the social media pages for everybody. But you can go to votewatchnorthwest.org, and it's going to start this Saturday, 1 o'clock to 4:30 p.m. They're bringing in some experts in election analysis and the truth. It's going to be at the Greyhound Park right on the Idaho-Washington border. So if you are interested, you can head there. And Glenn Morgan has been really doing a great job exposing all of the things that have been swept under the rug, really, regarding election integrity. I really want to thank everybody today as well for all the emails, all the text messages. We're coming together as a great team to fight for liberty and against this tyranny that is encroaching in our country. Do everything you possibly can to make it on October 15th, Friday night, 5 o'clock, downtown Spokane. Help us stand with those who might be losing their jobs. This is Matt Shea. Thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may you make this generation the greatest one. Keep up the fight.